Hello.
And welcome to AdLib, the York Theatre Royal podcast,
where we interview industry professionals and get an insight into the theatre world.
I'm Henry.
And I'm Jessie.
And this is going to be one of hopefully a few episodes during the current COVID-19 virus outbreak, where we're trying to take a positive look and stay hopeful about what the future may hold for the theatre industry. We're going to refer to these episodes as interval episodes because theatre is just taking a short break at the moment as everything is shut down. But we know it'll be back soon.
Yeah, this is, you know, a lot of artists are out of work, so this is a time where we can do some Skype interviews. So bear with us as we get used to this way of interviewing. Maybe Henry will add some bloopers in to the end.
But no, at this time, like, theatres and arts organisations need your support more than ever. So have a listen, hope you enjoy the interviews that we do. But listen how that you might be able to support your local arts organisation.
In this episode, we talk to B. Udell Smith, who is the director of Pigfoot Theatre. Pigfoot Theatre are an environmental theatre company, and she has a lot of very interesting things to say, and what they're doing with their theatre is really exciting.
So we're now joined by B, who is the director of Pigfoot Theatre. Thank you for joining us on Skype at this interesting time. You doing all right?
I'm okay. I'm, just feeling very sorry for anyone who has rent to pay and is now out of work or has dependents. But yeah, it just feels like you feel very powerless, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should we start off by talking about sort of yourself and Pigfoot a bit, and then we'll get into the whole situation at the moment. So do you want to just, tell us a bit about yourself?
So I am an emerging theatre maker. I'm a director and I also run Pigfoot Theatre. We are an environmental theatre company. We're the first theatre company in the world to make explicitly carbon neutral theatre. Well, obviously, sort of 300 years ago, theatre was naturally carbon neutral, but in the current climate of sort of, you know, the Western world in 2020, we're the sort of first company to explicitly make that our aim, to make carbon neutral theatre in a non-carbon neutral world, if that makes sense. And we began originally just as an emerging theatre company, but kind of seeing what was going on with the world. In 2018, I decided that I wanted us to focus just on environmental theatre. And I wanted us to do it in a way that, didn't damage the planet while we were at it.
Wow. So who else is in Pigfoot Theatre?
So the core company is me and our producer, Hetty Hodgson, and then we have a collective of artists, writers, designers and performers who we have worked with in the past and we will work again with in the future. And that sort of is between 10 and 20,
Wow. And did you start at university?
Yes, we did. So we began, the company began in my second year at university. And then in my third year, we started focusing just on environmental theatre and we went to the National Student Drama Festival in 2019.
Cool. So this is kind of all about How to Save a Rock, which is your kind of best known piece at the moment. So how did that one particularly come about?
We wanted to make a show which was positive and was about the climate crisis. And that was kind of all that we went into our first R&D with. We decided that we loved the idea of polar bears as a metaphor of kind of what people think about climate change, and maybe an idea that has become very cliched and that we need to get away from. So we sort of found this story of a girl who gets a letter from the last polar bear in the wild and decides to go save it. And we sort of, through our R&D, the kind of research we did at the time, decided that, you know, group action was what we very much wanted to focus on, is like, if our play gives an answer to the climate crisis, if that's even possible, it is very much kind of the power of group action and what we can do if we all work together.
Yeah, because I think what your piece does compared to other things I've seen is it somehow tries to remain positive. It's not all this is the end of the world, doom and gloom. It's enjoyable in that sense.
So how did you
kind of find balancing that?
I think we have always tried to leave our kind of discuss our own anxieties and fears and potentially our own feelings of pessimism in the rehearsal space, to very much allow space for that, but to then kind of, I don't want to say like move past them, but to kind of challenge ourselves to be like, okay, let's leave these here in the rehearsal room and let's think about how we can actually come up with a positive spin on what we've just been discussing and implant that in the play. It has been hard at times because there are just, yeah, been moments over the last year and a half where it's felt very much like, oh God, this is yet another blow. But I think it's important to us, especially because the piece is now targeted at kids, to remain positive and remain hopeful.
And has it always, I know that you've had quite a few different evolutions of it, was it not targeted at kids to start with? When Henry and I saw it in Edinburgh, it felt like something that was for everyone.
It originally was kind of targeted at people our age, so between, you know, 18 and 30. It then kind of became apparent to us that it was a very like kid-friendly show. And I think after our vault run, that's when it sort of really crystallised in our heads that I think it's, some people feel like kid theatre's somehow like inferior. I know when I first was told like, oh, your show would be brilliant as a kid's show, I was like, what? No, that's not what it is. But I think now looking back on it, it feels like it's almost been like waiting to be turned into like a specifically family show the whole time. Kids are so aware of climate change. We've been doing a lot of workshops with kids age like 10 and 11, and they're really aware of climate change. They're really passionate about stopping it, but they don't actually know a lot of the facts and a lot of the kind of science behind it. So hopefully if our show can kind of allow children to like learn slightly more of like exactly what's going on and then feel empowered to take action, then I think that would be, yeah, definitely a big success.
How have you found their reactions to sorry Jesse, you go.
No, you go.
This is the fun of doing it on Skype. How have you found that kids have reacted to the piece and sort of the workshops that go along with it then? And they like really got stuck in?
The kids love the like radical realism of the story. So the polar bear, the kind of idea of this bear like waiting for the characters at the top of Scotland and all the kind of complications they run into, kids find that quite like funny and entertaining. So that's been fantastic. And then the workshops, yeah, they love it. I'd forgotten how much you loved learning as a child. So it's just been really fantastic to like teach young people about like specifically in our play, we really focus on like peat bogs as a kind of, as a like not very like commonly publicly discussed, but in very important kind of natural resource and like carbon sink. And we've had some kids who just loved learning about that peat bogs even existed and were like, oh, we're going to go back to school and do our science project on this. This has been like so interesting. So that's been really exciting.
And what changes have you made to the show to sort of decide that it is now a kids friendly show?
I mean, mostly for us, it's just been simplifying things and going forward into our kind of final development phase, when and if that can still happen. It's about simplifying the narrative, simplifying the dialogue, kids are really clever, young people are so fantastically intelligent. However, I think as emerging theatre makers, we can so often be led down this trap of wanting to be really, like, clever and kind of, like, thinking that, like, complicated equals good theatre, like, good art. And actually, I think that for us, especially because it's such a narrative story, actually making that really clear and making the audience know what's going on all the time is actually much more important than being clever, necessarily.
Got some really lovely layers to the play. So you've got the three main characters who are friends who go on this journey to Scotland, and then you've got these scientist characters who come in, and as well as some like really amazing audience participation, they explain some background to climate change. So are those the bits that you've simplified and worked on?
Yes, yeah, definitely, because I think we were kind of going full pelt in those moments, and we're trying to bring them back a bit and make them slightly easier to kind of grasp onto what's being said. We use the scientists to particularly explore climate gate, which is something that happened in 2009, and that I feel like people my age, I definitely had no idea that it had happened until we started researching the show. But I think for anyone who's sort of like 5-10 years older than me, especially environmentalists, they have like a very clear memory of that time and kind of the like horrific effect on kind of climate science that this like hacking had. And so we're really passionate about like bringing that to young people and bring that story to young people. We just need to do it in a slightly more, yeah, slightly clearer way.
Yeah, accessible. Yeah.
Accessible, yeah. Yes.
So one of the things that makes your show carbon neutral is having at least one bike. Is it two bikes now that you've got on stage?
Yes.
So you've got two bikes that power the entire show. How did that come about? What kind of went into those ideas?
I've been really into the idea of using bikes to power electricity since I was a kid. There's a fantastic renewable energy centre in Wales called the Centre of Alternate Technology. They think about energy in such a creative way. And I was fortunate enough to go a couple of times when I was young because my family lived near Wales. And I think it's got like a train which goes up a hill, and I think the energy of that movement then powers the train. The energy of the train down powers the train going up, and that's, you have to go in the train to even get to the visiting centre, and the whole thing just makes you think about energy in this really like, oh, like, it's not just a plug board that you plug your phone into and it just like magically charges up. It's like something that could be created by physical movement that you can see, by like the movement of a human body. And I think that idea just seemed to translate really well into theatre, because obviously the whole thing is kind of powered by the movement of the performers. And so because we developed it while students, we were able to kind of work with people in the engineering department to build our first generator. We were really fortunate actually to kind of be able to link up with other people our age who were willing to do that work with us. Since then, we have upgraded our generator to a model which was first developed by the Oxford Playhouse 7 years ago and has been used in a production called Bicycle Boy, which is another like kid-friendly bike-powered show, but it's like outdoors and it's like for much younger kids than sort of is our target audience now. But the fantastic thing about their generator is that you can plug anything into it. So you could, with two bikes, with two cyclists cycling fast enough, plug in your phone and charge that. In our show, we are currently just using like LEDs, and we're going to start using a speaker, and we want to play around with using a projector and stuff like that. But yeah, it's still powered by the now two cyclists who are cycling constantly throughout the show.
So are there still three actors in the show?
Yes.
Oh, great. So you've had to like rethink, I guess, moments where now there's people on bikes. Have you found any challenges to working in that way that you sort of wish that, I don't know?
I think we've always been kind of working against the tech rather than working with it. That's one thing that if our final development phase goes forward, we really want to target. But even with this new tech, which I was just like singing the praises of. It is very loud, so there are still a lot of audibility issues around the show. It is occasionally, I think it broke once during our 7th performances at Vault, but obviously that froze that entire show kind of off kilter if the performers kind of having to keep going in the dark and kind of improv around that happening during the middle of a scene. I think what obviously it does is kind of make those two performers like very, very, very static. And I think we're still not quite using that to our advantage enough. We're Vault playing around with like the performers who are on the bicycle. In some scenes it's quite physical. It's like around the bike is like a car, and that's obviously represented by the two people on the bike being in the two front seats, or the bike is like the sofa and the two people on the bikes are the two people sitting on the sofa. And then as it kind of goes further into the play, it becomes a bit more like actually like emotionally representative of like the two characters on the bike are the two who are like least keen to keep going on the journey or whatever. But I think I still feel like, yeah, because the tech is so new, and I mean, I've never personally seen another show powered by a bike other than Bicycle Boy, although there have been several. I think it's just figuring out how to really use that to like make the show better rather than, yeah.
But it's a really exciting challenge, I think, and it sounds like you've already had really positive outcomes from just like really tricky circumstances. This final development phase, talk us through that.
We want to do 2 weeks of rehearsals with a longer script. So the show now has a runtime of 80 minutes, and as I've said, is sort of specifically aimed at 9+. We want to integrate the tech from the beginning of the rehearsals, which is something we've never done. We want to have every single rehearsal with the actors on the bike. I mean, obviously, that means our performers are going to be just like ultra fit by the end of the rehearsal period. But yeah, potentially having the performers cycling during most of the rehearsals. We want to really play around with the show, and actually now the developments in the last few days have been happening, we want to kind of go forward with the awareness that we might have to live stream our shows for our final leg of the tour, and kind of thinking about where the cameras would be in that situation. How do we make it as accessible as we possibly can? And then our final key development in this phase is that we want to make every performance a relaxed show, so kind of working out what that means in terms of everything, like what moments need to be completely cut, how can we just make the whole thing, like, because the show has so much audience interaction, that's the part that, yeah, we need to be most aware of, making it kind of relaxed, friendly.
Oh, so I think we'd be silly not to mention, staging change when talking about your show, because obviously you won an award from them, if I'm remembering that correctly, and kind of you've worked with that network. So could you just, for people that don't know, what is Staging Change?
Sorry. Staging Change is a network of theatre makers, venues, theatre professionals who are passionate about creating a greener future for our industry. It is run by the incredible Alice Boyd and Josie Del Jones, who make their own climate theatre and climate comedy. They often run workshops, panels, discussions. There have been several focused around Vault Festival, and they did lots at the Edinburgh Fringe last year. They hope to kind of encourage as many theatre companies and venues as possible to kind of create steps to make their work greener, because I think as a theatre maker, you are so often focused on kind of constraints of time and money, and those I think normally actually lead you to the like least green option, like going to Primark to get you all your costumes or something is like a really simple example, when potentially going to a charity shop might cost the same but just take more time. So it's kind of hopefully encouraging theatre makers and venues to kind of make those changes.
And I think there's a lot of hidden things that you don't think about, where the set gets skipped at the end because there's nowhere to keep it. And
yeah,
lots of things that aren't talked about that hopefully initiatives like this will prevent from happening.
Yeah, I think it's hard when you feel like if a venue or a festival tells you, gives you information which says, on average, people print 2,500 flyers. Unless you kind of have a network of people around you who are discussing the kind of climate impacts of that, it's hard to necessarily challenge everything you kind of receive as advice and be like, you know what, that isn't environmentally friendly. I'm gonna like really go out on a limb and do something different. I think when you have a kind of network, or several networks as there now are around environmental theatre making, it kind of encourages you to be like, oh, well, this company last year, they used like a stamp to promote their show at the Edinburgh Fringe, so I'm gonna do that instead of... It just helps you kind of feel like, yeah, other people are making the same decisions.
So, moving on to the current situation. So you, if I understand right, you've just come out of a meeting with Pigfoot, kind of deciding how you're going to approach everything. How was that?
Mm-hmm. It was so much... Well, it's just so much easier for us than I think it is for many theatre makers right now. We have had some workshops cancelled. And that's obviously like a financial... hit, but we don't have any upcoming shows or workshops already programmed, so I just feel like it must be such a disheartening and frightening time for anyone whose work has just been cancelled, or any venues or festivals who've just had to kind of close down for the foreseeable future. We're working on programming a tour which will include lots of workshops, and we're also looking at starting development of our new show. And I think for us it's just about like this real sense of uncertainty going forwards. We can't kind of make plans with any assurances anymore. So yeah, I think we're very fortunate, and my heart just goes out to anyone who is suddenly hugely out of pocket because of upcoming work that's been cancelled.
Well, how do you feel that people can best support the industry at the moment? So obviously the events aren't happening, but you got any kind of thoughts about that?
I mean, there's already, within like 12 hours, there's so much discussion around this. Exeunt have like a fantastic kind of list of resources for theatre makers, but it could also be kind of helpful for people who just love going to the theatre. What's on Stage have already published something. The main things that people are saying are kind of, if you can, donating your tickets rather than refunding them, rather than asking for a refund. If your favourite company has play scripts, buying play scripts. If you can, writing to your MP, I think that one's like something that would be most effective if it's done like within the next 24 hours, like writing to your MP and kind of complaining as much as you can around the Prime Minister's decision not to close.
Can you explain to people who might not know why that decision is so harmful, the way he's gone about wording the advice?
As in, the as in the address yesterday, why that's problematic.
Yeah.
The press statement yesterday, or the press conference, addressed consumers rather than theatre makers. It asked consumers not to attend pubs, restaurants and theatres. In doing so, it did not allow theatres to close and ask for insurance. That's the main issue that theatre venues are kind of struggling with. At the moment, the imperative to close is kind of being placed on them by members of the public. They are closing because they have taken the kind of currently courageous decision to prioritise public health over the future of their kind of organisation. And because it's been like up to them, it's like done in by like within their own agency rather than being told to do it, they might not be able to get insurance for the huge financial losses that they will sustain throughout this upcoming period. So if the Prime Minister were to say all theatres, restaurants, pubs, cinemas must close, that would be a whole different ballgame, and that would allow all of those organisations to claim insurance.
Thank you.
So I'm going to try and put a positive, like, how are you going to keep yourself busy over the next however long? What kind of things are you going to do that, like, you go, actually, this will keep me motivated, should we say?
A lot of people are already posting about workshops they're going to deliver online, which is really exciting. I'm just going to double check how you say her name. But this one is one that I've already discovered that I just love so much. It's from Eve Lee, who is, I think, at Eve Lee on Twitter. Yeah, at E-E-V-L-E-E on Twitter. She has translated one of her workshops into a Twitter chain, which I've never seen done before. And I'm going to do that this evening because it just looks like loads of fun. It's kind of going through the workshop step by step, like each step is a tweet, which I just think is amazing. A lot of people are kind of talking about whether they can write monologues or shows or whatever, which are kind of able to be rehearsed by actors in different spaces. So the rehearsals would take place over Skype. Papa Tango has pledged £2,000 to support 20 artists who write 5-minute monologues. And you're going to be paid £100 for each monologue if you're kind of one of the winning ones, which will then be rehearsed online. That is just insane. I think that's amazing. As a company, we're going to be doing a lot of research into live streaming. I don't know if you guys saw a couple of weeks ago, I think it might have actually been a couple of months ago now, a lot of kind of articles came out about the impacts of data centres. So the data centre industry is equivalent to the aviation industry. The song Despacito, which was the first video to hit 5 billion views, was equivalent, in 1 year, it cost as much as powering 40,000 US homes. Just people watching that one song. So we are, the problem is at the moment offsetting companies, like carbon offsetting organisations, aren't, a lot of them aren't kind of sure how to factor that into their like offsetting that they offer companies. And as a carbon neutral theatre company, we have to offset any unavoidable costs. So for example, I am recording that I'm spending this time talking to you guys on my laptop, and we will offset the electricity used to power my laptop for this conversation. But one thing that we're going to be looking at loads over the next month is how we can possibly offset the kind of data used. So I'm like really not scientific, but the data of you guys' cameras are being sent to a data center somewhere in the UK, and so is mine, and that's yours is coming back to me and mine's coming back to you, and working out how we can begin to offset that going forward, so that potentially if we do have to live stream our shows, we could offset the data of the shows being live streamed. So that's very like currently not really developed that kind of technology, that maths around that. So hopefully we will be able to work with some offsetting organisations to kind of figure that out. I think that's our like main step as a company to keep us busy.
To offset something, I don't know if this is, would planting a tree count? Is it that kind of thing you would then have to do?
Yes.
Okay, brilliant.
So it can be as simple as planting a tree or restoring the coral reefs. And basically, the amount of tons of CO2 that you have used in that year as a company is turned into a kind of financial figure of how much will it cost to offset those tons, and then you pay that amount, and that will go to an organisation, a charity around the world, doing something that will take carbon out of the atmosphere. The organisation who we're currently in conversation with is called Climate Stewards. They are a really interesting organisation because they do really unexpected projects. I'm not going to get the details of this entirely right, but there was one that I was being told about the other day on Saturday, in which the organisation that you're offsetting money supports helps families in developing countries to by building them a better oven, essentially, so that instead of burning some really carbon heavy fuel, I think like coal or wood or something, you can use more natural resources to warm your house and heat your food, cook your food. And so that's a really incredible one because it kind of helps people and reduces carbon emissions at the same time. So yeah, it's quite a big industry that I think we're only just beginning to understand. But yeah.
One of the things that I think will come of an incident like this is that we'll be forced to evolve in different ways, and there'll be new developments in streaming and online use, and this might make some interesting and possibly good changes to theatre in the long term, which could be quite interesting to see.
I don't know if you've been keeping up with obviously, coronavirus is completely devastating so many sectors of every corner of the world, but there have been some interesting benefits for the climate. I don't know if you've been following that as a theatre company. I think there's been something I'm getting this wrong, but a 75% reduction in emissions in China. Do you have anything to say about that?
It's a funny one because obviously you can never ever ever begin to justify what's happening, but I think you're completely right that the faintest silver lining that can be seen right now is that it is really changing how we engage with particularly carbon heavy industries such as transport. The aviation industry is really struggling. I think that in the next few days there will be an opportunity to challenge the government not to bail out British airlines. And I think people doing whatever it takes to encourage their MPs not to bail out those airlines could be hugely influential. I mean, some people, vulnerable people rely on airlines to visit family, etc. I'm not calling at all for the death of all aviation instantly, because that would destroy quite a lot of infrastructure that has been built. However, obviously at the moment very few airlines are still running trips and stuff, and that is actually as you said, kind of amazing to see how quickly the world can adapt to a different way of living.
And I wonder whether, I had this thought a few days ago and then I saw it on Twitter, whether plays will, new writing will have to somehow, there is a world before coronavirus and a world after coronavirus, and if things will have to acknowledge that it's happened. Do you think this will affect, because you say you've got a new play in development, is that something that you've been thinking about, or is it not really got to that stage yet?
I wonder whether going forward even once the kind of COVID-19 crisis is sort of somewhat resolved, we will all, as theatre makers, be very aware of live streaming and the kind of necessity to make performances live stream friendly, if necessary. Obviously, that is actually really great in terms of accessibility, because some people can't make it to theatres all year round. So that could be really fantastic if we all collectively decide to like make our next productions live streamable. I think in terms of our next show, we have this quite well, the technology doesn't currently exist for the concept that we want to build our next show around. So we have a lot of kind of work to do in terms of taking the technology that does exist and translating it into a kind of theatre environment. I think once we know that that's possible, we'll then need to start thinking about kind of like, how do we make this like COVID-19 proof? How do we kind of make sure that this can't be disrupted by a similar type of emergency? But yeah, at the moment, we're just trying to desperately talk to scientists who might be able to help us.
So you don't think you'll be writing a piece about COVID-19 anytime soon then?
I personally won't be.
Well, you might get really bored in self-isolation. Who knows?
Okay, to kind of wrap it up on a nice little fun thing. So we're hopefully going to do a few of these episodes, and we're kind of calling them interval episodes because we're in a little break, which is kind of nice. So if you're stuck at home for weeks, months, however long, what is your interval drink? What's the little thing that's going to keep you going for the second half, should we say? It's a little nice positive thing.
I'm really into mint cordial right now. I think I stopped drinking alcohol just before Christmas and I love it. I'm obsessed. And I love fizzy water or like more conventional like tonic and mint. That's so like LA. That's really gross, but
but that's fine. That's fine. You're allowed that.
Tress, what's it called? The mint cordial, or is that something? Those green bottles.
Yes. Yeah. I also don't know what it's called. I really should, but I just know.
See, I grew up in France and I still don't remember what it's called because it's a French drink and I grew up on it and I Tress something.
Cool. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there if that's okay. Wash your hands. Stay safe.
Ooh.
We'll try and stay positive with it all. But do you want to just give a shout out to your Pigfoot social media where people can find
you? Yes. We are at Pigfoot Theatre on Facebook and Twitter, and that's Pigfoot with a P rather than Pigfoot with a B. And we are at Pigfoot Theatre Co on Instagram. In the next month, we're going to be running a one climate digital action you can do a day. What's the right word? Campaign. And that will be launching in the next few days. So if you do want to check us out and get involved with the digital climate actions that we're doing, that'd be fantastic.
Can I just ask why it's called Pigfoot?
Is a very stupid reason. My favourite theatre companies as a kid, which made me want to go into theatre, both had animals in the title. So Gecko and Knee-High. Knee-High used to be called Knee-High to a Grasshopper. So I felt like if you named your theatre company with an animal in the title, that would mean that you were a good theatre company.
I think that sounds very logical. Cool, thank you so much.
But yeah, thank you so much. And all the best with all the future projects once we get out of this mess.
Yes, you too. And thank you so much for speaking with me. It's been really fun.
Thank you so much.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Brilliant.
Thank you so much to Bea for joining us at it's naturally quite a difficult time for everyone. We really appreciate you coming in to have a chat with us. So naturally, as we said at the start, this is a very difficult time for the arts organisations across the country. So if you can support your local organisations, please do, because they really need it.
Yeah, Bea made some really good points about different Twitter threads and resources that you can access and see how you can help. Also, yeah. If you do find yourself self-isolating or you know, not doing your normal everyday thing, then we've got a couple of episodes that you might want to go back and listen to pass the time, I suppose.
Yeah, we promise they're all right.
Well, you know, we tried.
And hopefully we'll have some more episodes coming your way very soon.
We wish everyone the very best. Be safe, take care, and thank you for listening.
And we'll see you soon. Bye! You've frozen, Jesse, you've frozen.